Imagine you run a company, right? You execute a strategic move that fundamentally upgrades your entire business architecture.
You basically achieve what is arguably the rarest form in investing.
Exactly. You secure this permanent structural advantage. And yet, I mean, when you look at the ticker that day, the market has reacted by dropping your stock 1.5%.
Right, which is, it's a striking paradox. A company successfully rewires its foundational geometry for compounding, self-reinforcing growth, and the immediate response from the market is just a minor sell-off.
Yeah, and that profound gap between what the market measures daily, which is, usually macroeconomic noise, treasury yields, broad asset repricing, and the permanent structural shifts that a proper analytical framework can actually reveal, well, that's what makes our discussion today so compelling. So welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is to analyze a remarkable article from the Averaging Up collection titled The Double Swell. We are going to decode the mathematics of structural growth, examine how certain elite companies generate compounding returns at zero marginal cost, and explore why a seemingly straightforward software integration completely changed S&P Global's investment category.
Right, because we need to look past the daily fluctuations you see on a financial terminal. I mean, the objective for you as an investor is to examine the underlying architecture of these business models.
Precisely.
The market prices what it can measure in the present moment, but the framework we're exploring today, it prices what it can see beneath the surface, the enduring structure of the business itself.
Okay, let's unpack this from the foundation. To understand what S&P Global achieved on that day in June, you first have to understand the baseline architecture of an exceptional business.
Right.
The article defines this baseline as a free surfer, and it introduces a rather elegant equation, which is A multiplied by B. So how do we define those variables?
Well, in this framework, A represents the toll. That is what the business collects today. So its current revenue mechanism, its pricing power, the fee it extracts for providing a service,
Okay.
and B represents the wave. This is the structural secular growth that compounds the A over time. And the defining characteristic of a true free surfer here is that the cost of B is zero.
Which is key.
Exactly. The business does not pay for the wave. The wave just arrives independently.
Let's ground that at a concrete example for the listener because,
Yeah.
I mean, the concept of zero-cost growth is profound, but it can sound a bit abstract.
Sure.
The article presents the classic free surfer architecture, which is one toll, one wave, moving in one direction. And Visa is positioned as the archetype for this.
Yeah, so consider Visa's business model. They operate a toll on a global network. Every time a consumer taps a card anywhere on Earth, Visa collects a fraction of a cent or small percentage of the transaction.
Right.
That is the A. The B, the wave, is global digitization. It's the unstoppable secular migration of the global economy from physical cash to electronic payments.
The critical point being that Visa does not have to spend its own capital to force that migration. I mean, they don't pay merchants to upgrade their systems,
No, not at all.
and they certainly don't pay consumers to abandon paper money. The broader economy simply digitizes itself. The wave arrives inside Visa's economic moat completely for free.
Exactly. It's one force, one direction, and zero capital expenditure required to generate that underlying growth. MasterCard operates on the exact same architecture, by the way.
Right.
But businesses can evolve beyond this single wave. And this brings us to the next structural iteration outlined in the article, the resilient free surfer.
Okay, so the math changes here.
It does. The mathematical notation expands. So instead of just A multiplied by B, we have A multiplied by the sum of B1 plus B2.
Meaning two distinct waves.
Two independent parallel waves feeding the same toll. It provides significant stability. The article cites Moody's as the archetype for this stage.
Because they have two massive macro forces behind them.
Right. Moody's has its toll, its credit ratings, and analytics, and it benefits from two structural forces. B1 is the organic growth of global debt issuance, and B2 is the rising consumption of its financial data by artificial intelligence systems. Both waves are real, and both are completely free to Moody's.
I look at that resilient model almost like a major city drawing its power grid from both a massive wind farm and a vast solar array.
Oh, that's a good way to picture it.
Yeah, it provides an incredible degree of security for you as an investor. If the wind stops blowing for a month, the sun is still shining and the city keeps running, the toll collects from both sources.
Exactly.
But, and this is the limitation of that grid, the wind does not make the sun shine brighter. The waves remain stubbornly independent of one another. They run in parallel, but they don't interact or amplify each other.
Right. That additive model provides stability, but it lacks intrinsic acceleration. The forces do not compound one another. So to reach the pinnacle of this framework, a business requires a mechanism where those energy sources actually do drive each other forward.
Which perfectly sets up the rarest architecture in investing, the double swell.
Yes. The double swell completely changes the mathematical relationship. We move from A times the sum of B1 and B2 to A times B1 with an upward reinforcing arrow pointing to B2.
Meaning it's a loop.
Exactly. It represents two waves that feed each other in a closed loop. B1 strengthens B2 and B2 strengthens B1. The business no longer just collects a toll from two independent directions, you know. It sits at the absolute center of a self-sustaining accelerating current.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because until June 8, 2026, the framework identified only one pure double swell in existence, which was MSCI.
Right.
They essentially own the indices that dictate how global capital is allocated. So let's break down their specific loop.
Okay, so MSCI's first wave, B1, is passivization.
Let me pause you there. For anyone listening who doesn't spend their days, you know, deep in asset management white papers, let's clarify passivization and basis points.
Of course. Passivization is the structural migration of capital away from active stock pickers. So human fund managers trying to beat the market and into passive index funds that simply track the market mechanically.
Right.
And when an institution moves $1 billion into an MSCI-linked index fund, MSCI collects a licensing fee measured in basis points. A basis point is just 0.01%.
Which sounds tiny.
It sounds small, yeah. But applied to trillions of dollars, it generates massive revenue. That wave is external, it's relentless, and it's free to MSCI.
And their second wave, B2, is the rise of AI and agentic workflows. And let's also define that term. When the article talks about an agentic workflow, what does that actually mean in the context of portfolio management?
Well, we're not talking about a simple chatbot answering questions. An agentic workflow refers to artificial intelligence operating autonomously to execute complex, multi-step tasks.
Without a human in the loop.
Exactly. In finance, this means AI agents actively constructing portfolios, analyzing risk, and running quantitative research without human intervention. These AI agents consume massive amounts of MSCI data to optimize those portfolios.
What's fascinating here is how these two distinct waves couple together to form the double swell. The averaging up collection explains that AI actively accelerates passivization. We need to look at why that happens mechanically.
It comes down to data structure.
Right. Automated agentic workflows naturally default to machine-readable structured data, which is exactly what an index provides.
Precisely. I mean, it is highly inefficient for a machine to allocate capital based on the subjective, narrative-driven arguments of a human fund manager. An active manager's thesis often exists in unstructured formats, you know, a PDF report, a management interview, a qualitative judgment.
Machines hate that.
They do. An index, however, is a mathematical reality. It is pure, structured logic. Therefore, every time an AI agent is deployed to automate portfolio allocation at scale, it invariably defaults to passive management. So the implementation of B2 directly feeds the growth of B1.
And the loop reverses flawlessly. Passivization feeds AI. Because as more global capital flows into these passive vehicles, the structural complexity of the market increases.
Dramatically.
You suddenly have trillions of dollars demanding highly sophisticated index-level analytics. You need to understand factor exposure, and risk decomposition.
Right. And just to clarify those terms for you, factor exposure means understanding how much a specific portfolio is vulnerable to underlying variables like rising interest rates or a sudden drop in energy prices.
Okay.
And risk decomposition is breaking down the overall volatility of a fund into its precise constituent parts. When trillions of passive dollars require that level of daily analysis across thousands of global equities, I mean, it completely surpasses human capacity.
The scale of that analytical demand can only be served efficiently by machines.
Exactly.
The passive capital demands the AI. B1 feeds B2. The swell builds upon itself in a closed circuit.
And we must look closely at how MSCI achieves this coupling. As the article highlights, MSCI couples through the substrate, the market itself. Passivization systematically converts active capital into passive capital.
Right.
The remaining pool of active management is the fuel for this engine. As that active pool depletes over time, every marginal conversion into a passive index becomes structurally more significant to the market's behavior. The entire reinforcing loop runs through the physical reality of the global capital markets.
That establishes a remarkably high bar. I mean, it requires immense scale and near-monopolistic market dominance to couple waves through the actual substrate of the market.
It really does.
So having established the mechanics and the exclusivity of the double swell architecture, we can turn to the core catalyst of our analysis. How did S&P Global, on a random Tuesday in June, cross this line?
Well, prior to June 8, S&P Global was classified strictly as a resilient free surfer. It had two parallel waves, the organic growth of global debt and commodities, and the increasing consumption of its data by AI. But the critical distinction is that these waves were merely additive.
The waves were independent. I mean, if you apply the analytical framework, you have to ask the mechanical question, did an AI model consuming S&P Global's credit data magically induce corporations to issue more debt?
Right. And the answer is no.
Exactly. The link was far too indirect. It ran through too many intermediaries in the real economy. The waves ran parallel without amplification.
But the topology shifted entirely with the Cohere announcement. S&P Global integrated its vast repositories of financial data, credit ratings, market indices, capital IQ intelligence, and commodity benchmarks directly into Cohere's enterprise AI platform, North.
But the press release is just the surface, right?
Exactly. The partnership press release is just the visible manifestation of a profound architectural upgrade beneath the surface.
It all comes down to the mechanism of delivery. Kensho, which is S&P Global's AI subsidiary, spent years building a retrieval infrastructure. We need to examine how AI actually interacts with data to understand why this matters.
Yes, the interaction layer is everything.
Before this infrastructure, an AI trying to analyze financial data might scrape a PDF, misinterpret a table, or hallucinate a rating. And in finance, a hallucination is catastrophic.
Right, so Kensho engineered a platform-agnostic foundational layer. It allows S&P Global's data to be consumed programmatically via API calls with citation-backed accuracy by any AI agent on any platform across highly secure enterprise workloads.
Okay.
Cohere was merely the first named integration of this capability. By deploying that retrieval infrastructure, S&P Global closed the loop. They built the coupling mechanism themselves. The math shifts from a plus sign to an upward reinforcing arrow.
Let's trace the mechanics of that new loop so you can see the engine running. More AI agents deployed on these enterprise platforms leads to a massive increase in the programmatic consumption of S&P Global's structured data. That sheer volume of API consumption directly drives higher licensing revenue. S&P Global then takes that specific revenue and reinvests it back into the Kensho retrieval infrastructure.
Exactly.
The pipe becomes faster, more robust, and more comprehensive. This makes the data increasingly frictionless for AI agents to utilize. And the lower the friction, the more agents rely on the data, driving consumption even higher.
It is a definitive architectural graduation. But the averaging up collection makes a crucial distinction here. While both MSCI and S&P Global now possess the double swell geometry, their coupling mechanisms operate differently.
Yeah, I have been analyzing this specific difference, and I want to push back on the implications a bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
S&P Global couples its waves through a purely technological distribution pipe, the Kensho infrastructure. MSCI, as we discussed, couples its waves through the actual market, the physical movement of capital from active to passive.
Right.
Doesn't that reliance on a proprietary software pipe make S&P Global's loop inherently less powerful than MSCI's market-level loop?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture detailed in the framework, it represents a deliberate trade-off between power and resilience. You are correct that MSCI's loop is tighter.
Because it's on one substrate.
Exactly. It operates on one central substrate, utilizing one primary mechanism, with a singular direction of flow. In analytical terms, a tighter loop generates more concentrated power per unit of capital moved.
But S&P Global operates across a much wider surface area.
Exactly. S&P Global has a broader loop. It scales across four entirely distinct tolls: ratings, indices, market intelligence, and commodity insights.
Right. That's a massive footprint.
It is. Furthermore, their retrieval pipe integrates across multiple competing AI platforms and endless enterprise use cases. A broader loop may lack the concentrated singular power of a single substrate model, but it provides significantly more resilience against a localized shock to any one sector.
So the double swell is the overarching category, but the specific geometry within that category dictates the behavior of the business.
Oh, sorry.
With two confirmed double swells now operating and defined, the rigorous application of this framework demands we look forward. Who is positioned to achieve this rare architecture next?
The article points directly to Moody's as the candidate in waiting.
Makes sense.
Moody's currently possesses the deepest, most critical reservoir of proprietary data in the financial sector. They hold decades of credit analytics, proprietary risk models, exhaustive KYC compliance data, and macroeconomic forecasting.
And it's incredibly defensible.
Crucially, yes, this reservoir is protected by an ultimate regulatory moat, the NRSRO designation.
The Nationally Recognized Statistical Rating Organization designation. For those unfamiliar with the regulatory plumbing of the financial system, this is an insurmountable barrier to entry.
Absolutely.
Government regulations and institutional investment mandates literally require debt to be rated by an NRSRO. You cannot simply spin up a tech startup in Silicon Valley, write a great algorithm, and replace Moody's.
No, the financial system is legally bound to consume their data.
So the raw material required for a massive double swell is absolutely present. Every bank, insurance company, and asset manager on Earth is structurally forced to consume Moody's data.
Yes, but what Moody's currently lacks is the coupling mechanism.
They are missing the pipe. They have not yet built the equivalent of Kensho's retrieval infrastructure, nor have they announced platform-agnostic AI integrations at the enterprise scale of the Cohere collaboration.
Right. The theoretical demand for autonomous AI agents to consume Moody's compliance and credit data is staggering, but the loop remains open. It is still an A times B1 plus B2 model.
A resilient free surfer.
Exactly. However, the framework suggests that the moment Moody's builds that programmatic pipe or announces a comparable enterprise integration, they will immediately promote to a double swell.
And because of that regulatory moat.
Because of that NRSRO moat, no AI agent will ever be able to bypass their toll. Once closed, their loop could potentially become the most durable of all three.
So what does this all mean for you as an observer of the markets? Let's bring this entire analysis back to the paradox we opened with.
The stock drop.
S&P Global graduates to the rarest architecture in investing, engineering a permanent structural advantage, and the stock drops 1.5%. How does the market miss something so profound?
Well, it reveals the fundamental difference in timescales between market pricing and architectural pricing. On June 8th, the market was reacting mechanically to a specific macroeconomic event. A strong jobs report was released, which immediately pushed Treasury yields higher.
We should break down that market mechanic. When Treasury yields rise, the risk-free rate of return increases. Mathematically, this lowers the present value of future cash flows.
Precisely. It triggered a broad algorithmic repricing of all long-duration assets. S&P Global, as a high-growth compounder, is classified as a long-duration asset.
Right.
So the market algorithms indiscriminately sold off the stock based purely on the shift in interest rates. The market prices duration, and it does so on a daily, even millisecond basis, driven entirely by macro noise and capital flows.
The profound graduation to a double swell was completely invisible against the noise of the tape.
Completely invisible. The market prices what it can measure today. It measures friction, yields, and immediate capital flows. But the analytical framework we are utilizing today prices what it can see for the next decade, the enduring architecture beneath the operating margin.
It's a completely different lens.
It evaluates the toll, the wave, the coupling mechanism, and the strength of the reinforcing loop. The framework prices permanent structural advantages, regardless of what the 10-year Treasury is doing on any given Tuesday.
The gap between those two pricing mechanisms,
yeah,
you know, the frantic daily noise of the market versus the permanent compounding architecture of the business, is where the insight and the opportunity truly lies.
Absolutely.
It reminds me of the quote from the surfer Laird Hamilton used in the article describing an ocean swell of unprecedented scale and power. He said it was line after line after line as far as the eye could see. When a business achieves the geometry of the double swell, the growth arrives relentlessly. It compounds upon itself, feeding its own momentum at zero marginal cost.
And this raises an important question to consider as you observe the technology sector evolving. As retrieval infrastructure like the standardized pipe Kensho built becomes increasingly common across the software industry, will the double swell maintain its status as the absolute rarest architecture in investing?
That's a great question.
Or, as autonomous AI agents become the primary consumers of all enterprise data, will a self-reinforcing distribution loop eventually become a baseline architectural requirement just to survive in the coming decade?
That is a profound proposition to explore as these structural shifts continue to unfold in real time. This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice. Visit averagingup.com to explore the full collection.